Cassette number 17, side 1, A Treatise on Cosmic Fire, continuing section 2, division D, Thought and Fire Elementals, on page 710. The consciousness aspect, embodying the love wisdom of the divine ego as it reveals itself by the means of mind, is predominantly there, and in the nine petals and their vibratory capacity lies hid all opportunity, all innate capacity to progress, and all the ability to function as a self-conscious unit, that entity we call man. Footnote: The Solar Lord, the Divine Ego. Of the two courses of soul development referred to by H.P.B. in her Voice of the Silence as the path of Dhyana and Dharma, or the Paramitas, Ramayana is based upon the latter. The seven portals, referred to in the book of the same name, correspond very probably to the seven cantos of this sacred poem. But I have read only the first canto, and I shall give you the analysis of it so far as I know. Excluding the preface to the poem, the first thing in the first canto is a description of the peculiar circumstances that attended Rama's birth in Dasaratha's family. Dasaratha is, as you all know, a descendant of solar kings who began to rule over this earth from the time of Manu, the Vaivasvata. As his name implies, he is a king whose car can travel in 10 directions, or, taking the occult microcosmic sense, he is king of the human body, which has 10 senses of action and perception that connect it with the 10 directions. You are thoroughly familiar with the idea that our ancient philosophers used to describe the body as a town with 9 gates. The 9 gates are, as you know, the 9 orifices of the human body. If you add to the 9 one more for the orifice known as the Brahma Rundra, or the door of Brahma, you get 10 gates corresponding to the 10 directions. The word Dasaratha indicates the consciousness connected with our senses, which consciousness is inferior to the consciousness which we call mind. From the Theosophist, volume 8, page 340. Return to text. Mahadeva sits at the heart. Surya, or Vishnu, reveals him in his essence as the wisdom of love and the love of wisdom, and Brahma, the creative logos, makes that revelation possible. The Father in heaven is to be revealed through the Christ, the Son, by the method of incarnation made possible through the work of the Holy Spirit. Page 711. All this has been brought about by the sacrifice and instrumentality of certain cosmic entities who offer themselves up in order that man may be. From their very essence, they give out that which is needed to produce the individualizing principle and that which we call self-consciousness, and thus enable the divine spirit to enter into fuller life by means of limitation by form, by means of the lessons garnered through a long pilgrimage, and through the assimilation of manifold existences. The fourth point to be noted is that when these three events have occurred, the light or fire that circulates along the monastic triangle is withdrawn to the center of the lotus, and this prototype of the future Antaskarana, if so it may be expressed, disappears. The threefold energy of the petals, the atoms, and the jewel is now centralized, because impulse must now be generated which will produce a downflow of energy from the newly made causal vehicle into the three worlds of human endeavor. We have dealt with the method of individualization through the coming in of the Lords of the Flame because it is the prime method in this solar system. Whatever methods may be pursued in the varying schemes and chains, this, at the middle stage, is the universal rule. Karmic conditions having to do with the planetary logos may effect modifications and bring into action Manasadevas, whose activity may not be the same in working detail, but the results are ever similar, and the divine egos in their causal bodies have analogous instruments to work through. A final point, which is of profound significance, is that the Agni Svatas construct the petals out of their own substance, which is substance energized by the principle of I-ness, or Ahamkara, page 712. They proceed to energize the permanent atoms with their own positive force, so as to bring the fifth spirilla in due course of time into full activity and usefulness. All possibility, all hopefulness and optimism, and all future success lies hid in these two points. As we have seen, the work of the Agni Shvatas on the mental plane resulted in a downflow of force or energy from the monad, or spirit, and this, in conjunction with the energy of the lower quaternary, produced the appearance of the body of the ego on the mental plane. In ordinary electric light, we have a faint illustration of the thought I seek to convey. By the approximation of the two polarities, light is created. By an analogous type of electrical phenomena, the light of the monad shines forth, but we have to extend the idea to the subtler planes and deal with seven types of force or energy in connection with the one polarity and with four in connection with the other. A scientific formula for the process of individualization conveys this dual approximation with its differing types of energy in one symbol and a number, but it cannot here be revealed. The Manasa Devas are themselves energized by force from the cosmic mental plane, a force which has been in operation ever since the individualization of the solar logos in kalpas far distant. They, in their corporate nature, embody the will or purpose of the logos and are the cosmic prototypes of our solar angels. The solar angels, on the mental plane of the system, embody as much of that will and purpose as the logos can work through in one single incarnation, and as they, in their groups, can develop. They work, therefore, through egoic groups, and primarily, after individualization, upon the mental units of the separated identities who go to the constituency of the groups. This is their secondary work. Their work, in part, might be described as follows. Page 713. Primarily, they bring about the union of the divine ego and the lower personal self. This has been dealt with. Secondly, they work through the mental units, impressing upon the atom that portion, microscopic as it may be, of the logoic purpose which the individual can work out on the physical plane. At first, their influence is unconsciously assimilated, and the man responds to the plan blindly and ignorantly. Later, as evolution proceeds, their work is recognized by the man in a conscious cooperation with the plan of evolution. Footnote: the sacrificer, or yajamana. The yajamana is the person who has sacrificed himself for the good of the world and who has undertaken to mold the affairs of it in obedience to the law. If the human body be taken as the sacrificial ground, the manas in him is the yajamana. All the doings of man in all his life, from birth to death, form one grand yagnic process that is conducted by the true human entity called the manas. He who is willing to sacrifice his body, speech, and thought to the good of all the world is a real yagnika, and all the higher lokas are reserved for him. The central keynote of yagnika's life is to do good unto all, irrespective of caste and creed, even as the sun shines for all. From Some Thoughts on the Gita, page 90. Return to text. After the third initiation, the will or purpose aspect predominates. It might here be noted that it is the positive force of the Manasa Devas that produces initiation. Their function is embodied by the Hierophant. He, seeing before him the vehicle for Buddhi, passes the voltage from the higher planes through his body, and by means of the rod, charged with positive manasic force, transmits this higher manasic energy to the initiate, so that he is enabled to know consciously and to recognize the plan for his group center through the immensely increased stimulation. This force descends from the manasic permanent atom via the antiskarana and is directed to whichever center the Hierophant, under the law, sees should be stimulated. He stabilizes the force and regulates its flow as it circulates throughout the egoic lotus, so that when the work of unfoldment is accomplished, the sixth principle at the heart of the lotus can stand revealed. After each initiation, the lotus is more unfolded and light from the center begins to blaze forth, a light or fire which ultimately burns through the three enshrining petals and permits the full inner glory to be seen, and the electric fire of spirit to be manifested. Page 714. As this is brought about on the second subplane of the mental plane, whereon the egoic lotus is now situated, a corresponding stimulation takes place in the dense substance which forms the petals or wheels of the centers on the astral and etheric levels. B. Individualization and the races. If this treatise serves no other purpose than to direct the attention of the scientific and philosophic students to the study of force or energy in man and in groups, and to interpret man and the human family in terms of electrical phenomena, much good will have been accomplished. The polarity of a man, of a group, and of a congeries of groups, the polarity of the planets and their relationship to each other and to the sun, the polarity of the solar system and its relationship to other systems, the polarity of one plane to another and of one principle to another, the polarity of the subtler vehicles and the scientific application of the laws of electricity to the totality of existence on the physical plane will bring about a revolution upon the planet second only to that effected at the time of individualization. I would point out here a certain significant fact which students will do well carefully to consider. In the third root race, individualization took place. Footnote: Root races. The secret doctrine teaches that these seven groups of human units inhabit seven continents during evolution. A. First race, the imperishable sacred land. B. The second race, the Hyperborean land. C. The third race, Lemurian. D. The fourth race, Atlantean. E. The fifth race, Aryan. F. Two more races will succeed the present one. Return to text. It was an event which became possible through certain conditions and polar relationships, and because the scientific laws were understood and the knowers took advantage of a peculiar electrical condition to hasten the evolution of the race. Page 715. It was electrical phenomena of a stupendous kind and produced the lights which ever burn. It was the result of the knowledge of natural law and its adaptation to opportunity. In the fourth root race, another adaptation of force occurred. Again, time and opportunity were taken advantage of to open the door into the fifth kingdom by the method of forced initiation. A third type of electricity played its part in bringing about this event, and it is the effect of this electrical phenomenon upon the units, who are themselves centers of energy, which, scientifically viewed, indicates a man's suitability for the ceremony of initiation and his availability as a transmitter of spiritual energy to the world. Every initiate is technically a transmitter of force, and his work is consequently threefold. 1. To provide a threefold vehicle capable of the necessary resistance to the force and able to receive and hold it. 2. To transmit it as energy to the world which he serves. 3. To store up a certain amount of it for a twofold purpose. A. To provide a reservoir of force for emergencies and for special work as required by the great ones. B. To act as a dynamo for the immediate group which all advanced souls, disciples, and initiates gather around them on some one or other of the planes in the three worlds. In the fifth root race, another tremendous happening may be looked for, and the time lies immediately ahead. It had its beginning in the energy which eventually culminated in the World War. The first effect of the appearance of fresh electrical stimulation from extra-systemic centers is ever to bring about a primary destruction leading on to revelation. Page 716. That which is imprisoned must be loosed. So it will be in this root race, the fifth. Certain cosmic forces are at work, and the full effect of their energy is not yet apparent. This incoming force, the hierarchy will avail itself of in order to push forward the planetary plans. In every case, the effect of the phenomenon is felt in some one or other of the kingdoms beside the human. In the individualization period, it is apparent that a tremendous stimulation took place in the animal kingdom, a stimulation which has persisted and which has led to the phenomenon of domestic animals, as we call them, and their relatively high stage of intelligence as compared to the wild animals. In Atlantean days, the opening of the door into the fifth kingdom, or into the stage of Buddhic consciousness, had a profound effect upon the vegetable kingdom. This effect can be seen working out in such results as are achieved by Burbank, and which are of a nature corresponding to the initiatory process in man, involving a rapid achievement of relative perfection. In the tremendous event which is impending, in the great revelation which is near at hand, the hierarchy will again take advantage of the time and the energy to bring about certain events which will work out primarily in the human kingdom, but which will also be seen as force regeneration in the mineral kingdom. The energy, when first felt in the human kingdom, brought about the conditions which caused the tremendous activity which resulted in war and which is causing the present world stress. In the mineral kingdom, it affected certain of the minerals and elements, and the radioactive substances made their appearance. This characteristic, or radioactivity, of pitch blend and the other involved units is comparatively a new development under the evolutionary law, and one which, though latent, only needed the drawing forth of the type of energy now beginning to pour in on the earth. Page 717. This force began to flow in at the end of the 18th century, and its full effect is by no means yet felt, for it will be several hundred years before it passes away. By means of it, certain discoveries are possible, and the new order comes in upon it. The great ones, who know the time and the hour, will bring about in our root race that which corresponds to the occurrences in the earlier third and fourth races. C. Methods of individualization. We have seen how the characteristic method of individualization in this solar system is the result of force emanating from the cosmic mental plane, which sweeps into activity those entities whose function it is to form the body of the ego out of their own living substance on the mental plane, and thus, through their own quality and nature, endow human units on the physical plane with the faculty of self-consciousness, thus producing man. It is their work also to energize the mental units of all men, and to coordinate, by means of the force which they embody, and to energize the sheaths of the threefold lower man, so that they may in due course of time intelligently express the will and purpose of the indwelling thinker. Through the carrying out of this function in the case of the human family, certain planetary and systemic conditions are brought about. The dense and etheric bodies of the Logos and of the planetary Logoi are merged, and one coherent vehicle of expression is provided for these cosmic entities. In the producing of self-consciousness in the human family, the full conscious occupation by the Logos involved is consummated. It is the moment of fruition, and from a certain esoteric standpoint, marks the attainment of one perfected septenary. The three involutionary or elemental kingdoms and the three subhuman kingdoms find their seventh principle in the fourth kingdom in nature, 3 + 4 = 7. When the life of God has circled through these seven kingdoms, then full self-consciousness is achieved from a certain relative standpoint, and the sun is on the way to attainment. Page 718. This relative perfection has then to be carried on to other stages, but they are stages in which the separated self-consciousness of the identities concerned, whether human or planetary, must eventually merge itself in universal consciousness. Certain centers in the bodies logoic and planetary are also stimulated, and the rays, if it might be so expressed, become radioactive. It is this radiation which will eventually bring about conscious group activity, which will lead to interaction between the planets, and which, under the law of attraction and repulsion, will bring about eventual synthesis. On extrasystemic or cosmic levels, the individualization process produces a corresponding activity in the egoic body of the Logos, and hence increased vibration in that center in the body of the one about whom naught may be said, which our Logos represents. It also produces a reaction or occult recognition in the prototype of the Septenate, or in the seven rishis of the Great Bear, and this reaction in cosmic circles will persist until the end of the Maha Manvantara, when the Logos is set free, even though temporarily, from physical plane existence. It also brings about a setting loose of force from the cosmic mental plane, which is cyclic in character. In this round, the fourth, the maximum force of this cycle was felt in the third root race. In the next round, during the fourth root race, and for a very brief period, a fresh cycle will reach its zenith and will again open the door of individualization in order to permit the entrance of certain very advanced egos who are seeking incarnation in order to carry out a special piece of work. Page 719. The next round may do so if the plans proceed as anticipated. In this case, the Manasa Devas concerned will not individualize animal men as in the previous round, but will stimulate the mental germ in those members of the present human family who, as HPB says, though apparently men, are without the spark of mind. Footnote: such are the Vedhas of Ceylon, the Bushmen of Australia, and certain of the lowest of the African races. Return to text. During the next 700 years, these low aboriginal races will practically die out and will not, in this round, reincarnate. They will be rejected. In the next round, opportunity will again occur, and the Manasa Devas will again renew their work of forming individualistic nuclei for the development of self-consciousness. The egos awaiting opportunity will not, of course, enter in until the human type of that era is sufficiently refined for their purpose. They are concerned with the unfoldment of the sixth petal of the logoic egoic lotus and are of such a nature that we can scarcely conceive of them. They are on the line of the Buddhas of activity, but the above named are free for this Mahamanvantara, whereas these particular egos have yet somewhat to work out. They could only come in the middle of the fifth round and were a group of initiates who arrested their own evolution, technically speaking, in order to take up a special piece of work on the planet Vulcan. Therefore, they must return to continue and complete that which has been left undone. Owing to the results of their experience on Vulcan, the physical vehicle necessitated is of such an order that they could not at this time and in this round incarnate without disaster. Individualization in the next round will begin to show indications of the third method, that of the next system. Page 720. This method has been described as that of occult abstraction. It will concern itself with the withdrawal from out of the lowest type of the then existing men, through knowledge of the etheric constitution of the body, of the vitality latent in it, and a temporary turning of that latent fire to the increase of the activity of the germ or spark of mind. This will be effected by a dynamic action of the will. This seems impossible and well-nigh senseless phraseology when considered in terms of consciousness and of spirituality. But let the student study the phenomenon in terms of the cosmic physical plane and from the standpoint of the gaseous and etheric subplanes, and he will see that in all these septenary fires, it is ever the fire of matter in reality, and these sevenfold diversifications of electrical phenomena can ever affect each other. Thus, in the Mahamanvantara, the three methods of individualization in connection with our planetary scheme are to be seen, A, in the moon chain, the gradual evolution of self-consciousness under natural law, B, in the earth chain, that of achieved self-consciousness through the aid of extraneous agencies. It is the distinctive method of this system. C, in the next round and chain, the method will be abstraction through willpower, but this in an embryonic manner. I have dealt with these three from the standpoint of our own scheme. In all the schemes whereon man is found at some period or another, these three methods will be contacted. They mark the gradual control by the Logos on cosmic levels of his threefold lower nature. In the first, the correspondence lies in the latent consciousness of matter and works under the law of economy. It concerns primarily the self-consciousness of the Logos in his dense physical body and his polarization therein. Page 721. It is likewise the same for a heavenly man, and a part of the mystery of evil is to be found in the readiness of certain of these cosmic entities, particularly our planetary Logos in the moon chain, to remain polarized in the physical etheric body after having supposedly dominated the material aspect, or gained the control of the third fire in an earlier system. A hint lies here for the wise student anent present evil on this planet. The second correspondence concerns the latent consciousness of desire and works under the law of attraction. It is the law for this system and deals with the ability of the Logos to love wisely in the occult sense of the term. It has relation to the polarization of the Logos in his astral body and produces the phenomenon called sex activity on all planes in the system. In the earlier system, emancipation was effected through the faculty of discrimination, though that word as used today is but a faint indication of the systemic process in those days. Through the force engendered during the process, that vibration was set up which persists today in matter. It is evidenced by the active intelligence and the discriminative selective capacity of the atom of substance. In this system, emancipation will be brought about through the line of occult dispassion. This likewise will leave its mark upon matter, changing it in such a way that in the third system, primordial substance will demonstrate a second quality. In the next system, non-attachment through abstraction is as near as we can get to the method of the liberating process, but it is useless for man to speculate upon this, as his mind cannot conceive of the condition. D. Avatars, their nature and their work. We have in our discussion above connected the phenomenon of individualization with the appropriation by the Logos, or by a planetary Logos, of their dense physical vehicles and their self-conscious existence through the medium of the physical body, page 722. A very difficult and mysterious subject might be touched upon here, that of avatars, and though it will not be possible for us to expound it fully, as it is one of the most occult and secret of the mysteries, perhaps a little light may be thrown upon this profound subject. For purposes of clarity, and in order to elucidate a matter of extreme difficulty to the Occidental mind, above all, on account of the fact that it has not yet grasped the rationale of the process of reincarnation, it would be wise to divide the differing types of avatars into five groups, bearing in mind that every avatar is a ray emanated from a pure spiritual source, and that a self-conscious entity only earns the right to this particular form of work through a previous series of lives of achievement. 1. Cosmic avatars. 2. Solar avatars. 3. Interplanetary avatars. 4. Planetary avatars. 5. Human avatars. As just said, an avatar is a ray of effulgent and perfected glory, clothing itself in matter for the purpose of service. All avatars, in the strict sense of the word, are liberated souls, but the cosmic and solar avatars are liberated from the two lower planes of the cosmic planes. While the planetary and the interplanetary avatars are liberated from the cosmic physical plane, our systemic planes, the human avatar has achieved freedom from the five planes of human endeavor. In a strictly technical and lower sense, a master in physical plane incarnation is a type of avatar, for he is a freed soul, and therefore only chooses to incarnate for specific purpose, but we will not deal with them. Page 723. Let us again subdivide these groups so as still further to clarify our ideas. 1. Cosmic avatars. They represent embodied force from the following cosmic centers, among others. A. Sirius. B. That one of the seven stars of the Great Bear, which is ensouled by the prototype of the Lord of our third major ray. C. Our cosmic center. They represent entities as far removed from the consciousness of man as man is from the consciousness of the atom of substance. Thousands of those great cycles which we call 100 years of Brahma have passed since they approximated the human stage, and they embody force and consciousness which is concerned with the intelligent coordination of the starry heavens. They have achieved all that man cannot conceive of as the transcendence of will, of love, and of intelligence, and in the synthesis of those three have added qualities and vibrations for which we have no terms and which cannot be visioned by even our highest adepts. Their appearance in a solar system is very unusual and is only recognized on the highest two planes. Yet, owing to the material nature of our solar system, Their advent is literally the appearance in a physical form of a spiritual being who is fully conscious. Such entities from Sirius appear at the occasion of the initiation of the Solar Logos, and they have a peculiar connection with the five Kumaras, and through them, using them as focal points for force, with the Mahachohan's department in all the occult hierarchies of the system. Only once has such a being visited our system in connection with the appearance in time and space of the five mind-born sons of Brahma. The effect of such a visit as that of the Avatar from Sirius is seen as the sum total of civilization and culture, viewing these from the standpoint of the entire system and in one flash of time. Page 724. An avatar from the cosmic center will appear as pralaya is nearing and will produce in the body of the Logos that which we call death. He is the cosmic reaper, and to reduce the above to words of an understandable nature, he belongs to a group which represents the abstracting energy of the cosmos, of which we find faint correspondences in the work of the destroyer aspect of the Logos, and in the forces which produce physical death and the disintegration of the physical body of man. It is not possible to say more on these fundamentally esoteric matters, and the value of what is said lies largely in the bringing to the mind of the student the reality of our cosmic interrelation. 2. Solar avatars. These avatars are of three types, though there are rarely many more. They are also extra-systemic visitors, and are mainly concerned with certain processes in the system, among others the administration of the law of cause and effect, or of karma. They embody the karma of the past kalpas, as far as our Logos is concerned, and give the initiatory impulse to the processes of adjustment, of expiation, and of recognition as it concerns the present system as a whole. One such entity, the karmic avatar, appeared upon the second logoic vibration, being swept in on the second breath. He has stayed until now. He will remain with us until all the schemes have entered upon their fifth round and are nearing their judgment day. At that time, he can withdraw, leaving the planetary logoi concerned to fulfill the karmic purpose unwatched. The vibratory impulse will then be so strong and the realization of the Buddhic principle so consciously vivid that nothing can then arrest the onward march of affairs. Under him work a number of cosmic entities who, as stated in the secret doctrine, have the privilege of passing the ring pass not. These are, nevertheless, not avatars, for they are themselves evolving through the administration of karma. Footnote: these are the Lepika Lords. Return to text, page 725. It is their work an opportunity to progress. An avatar can learn nothing from the place of his appearance. His work is to apply the force of some type of electrical energy to substance in one of its many grades, and thus bring about anticipated results. Another type of solar avatar, who can be seen appearing in the schemes, has relation to the heart center of a planetary logos, and appears on the higher planes, never on the lower, when the heart activity is making itself felt, and when the energizing process is seen to bring about three things: A, an expansion of consciousness; B, an increase of spiritual light and brilliancy; C, planetary radioactivity. It is this planetary phenomenon which produces, in connection with the fourth kingdom in nature, the throwing open of the door of initiation to man. Such avatars do not come in connection with any particular hierarchy, but only in relation to the total system. They produce the blending of the colors and the synthesis of the units in their groups. At the initiation of a planetary logos, an avatar may appear in his scheme on the seventh globe from that cosmic center or star which is ensouled by the particular rishi who, in the constellation of the Great Bear, is his cosmic prototype. This is, for the entity concerned, the taking of a physical form, for our higher planes are but matter from their standpoint. This has been emphasized frequently, as its significance is not yet sufficiently grasped. By means of the appearance of this avatar on the seventh globe, the planetary logos is enabled to preserve continuity of cosmic consciousness even when in physical incarnation. This solar avatar performs the same function for the planetary logos as the guru does for his disciple. Page 726. He makes certain events possible by means of the stimulation and protection of his aura, and he acts as a transmitter of electrical energy from the cosmic center. We must be careful to hold this analogy very lightly, for the real work accomplished cannot be grasped by man. This avatar has naturally a direct effect upon the centers of the heavenly man, and therefore upon the units or human monads, but only indirectly and upon the monad on its own plane. This influence meets with little response from the monad until after the third initiation, when its conscious life becomes so strong that it grips afresh its egoic expression in one direction and awakens to planetary realization in another. This type of avatar appears only at the time of the initiation of a planetary logos. The number of initiations taken by a planetary logos in this system vary from 2 to 4. 3. Interplanetary avatars. A very interesting group of avatars is here to be found. They are mainly concerned with three things. First, with the superintendence of the transfer of force units or egoic groups from one scheme to another, not with individual units from chain to chain. They appear usually twice in the history of a scheme, and though unable to take physical bodies of grosser material than those formed of atmic and the buddhic substance, they work with impulse in mental matter and thus effect these group transfers. They themselves are subdivided into three groups. A. Those effecting the transfer from the minor schemes or ray manifestations onto the third ray. They concern themselves with the result of the merging of the polar opposites in the four lesser schemes until but one is left, and then with the transference of the life and quality of this remaining one onto the third ray. Page 727. B. Those dealing with the transference and interaction of the life forces between the three major rays. C. Those producing the final systemic transfer at the end of the age. Secondly, certain avatars from the fourth creative hierarchy, for esoteric and for us inexplicable reasons, leave their own hierarchy and appear in one or other of the Deva hierarchies. This happens only once in the history of each scheme and occurs at the time of its densest physical appearance and has relation to the transference of Deva impulse from one scheme to another. They are connected in this way with the appearance of the self-conscious units, being the primal embodiment of the latent self-consciousness of the atom of Deva substance. They set the type for the Devas of any particular scheme. Once in the history of each scheme, an avatar from the constellation Capricorn appears on mental levels. This level is the lowest one on which these interplanetary deities appear. No more can be communicated on this matter. The mystery of the goat lies hidden here. This avatar makes his appearance in the third round of the third chain and disappears in the fifth round of the fourth chain. These interplanetary avatars come in as the products of much earlier kalpas when systemic conditions are refined enough to permit of their appearance. They are the nirmanakayas of an earlier solar cycle, who now again take the opportunity to effect, in an active sense and through physical manifestation, certain uncompleted work. 4. Planetary avatars. These emanate from the central planetary logos of a scheme and embody his will and purpose. Page 728. They are of two different kinds. The first type is a manifestation on etheric physical levels of the planetary logos himself for a specific length of time. It involves the definite taking of a physical body by one of the Kumaras. Such an avatar is to be seen in Sanat Kumara, who, with the three other Kumaras, embodies the four planetary quaternic principles. In a very real sense, Sanat Kumara is the incarnation of the Lord of the Ray himself. He is the silent watcher, the great sacrifice for humanity. As noted in the above paragraph, there are secondly three entities who embody planetary principles. They are, speaking from the present standpoint, the dynamic energy which holds together the three lower kingdoms, viewing these kingdoms as units and not as differentiations. They are closely connected with the energy aspect of the three earlier chains, and it only needed the work of an interplanetary avatar at the formation of the triangle, which resulted in the individualization period in Lemurian days, to enable them to take etheric bodies and incarnate among men. They act as focal points for the energy of the planetary logos on his own plane. The first Kumara is, in a mysterious sense, the energy which produces self-consciousness in the human family. The three other Kumaras, or the three Buddhas of activity, act as similar focal points for the energy which animates the three lower kingdoms and which produces their differing grades of consciousness. It is not possible to express this great mystery more clearly, but if the student couples these few hints with those earlier given in the Secret Doctrine, the mystery of the Holy Four may be somewhat clarified from the standpoint of energy and evolution. The times and seasons of their appearing vary according to the particular karma of the Lord of the Ray, and nothing in connection with these great cycles and incarnation periods can be revealed to the unpledged and the profane. Page 729. 5. Human avatars. These are fully dealt with by HPB, and there is nothing further to add to her information, for the time is not ripe. All the above has its place here, as it concerns the mystery of force and consciousness, and the fullest manifestation of a planetary logos and of a solar logos in a dense physical body is hidden in the appearance of these various avatars and in their effect. E. Individualization, a form of initiation. There is but little more that can be said at this time anent individualization. What has been said here and in the Secret Doctrine is but a manner of endeavoring to express profound and significant facts concerning existence and manifestation in terms of human thought and through the limiting medium of language. From the most esoteric standpoint, man is a deva. He is spirit and deva substance, united through the work of conscious deva energy. He unites within himself the three aspects of the deity. He is, while in objectivity, one, the self, the not-self, and the intelligent link in a very vital sense. Two, he is Shiva, Vishnu, and Brahma in synthetic manifestation. Three, he is the medium whereby the will of God, the love of God, and the mind of God become intelligible and apparent. Four, he is positive electrical force plus negative electrical force plus the equilibrizing medium. Five, he is the flame, the fire, and the spark in essential manifestation. Six, he is electric fire, solar fire, and fire by friction. Page 730. But the point which it is necessary here to emphasize is that man does not, in space and time and in the three worlds, demonstrate all these aspects simultaneously, but only simultaneously towards the close of the process of evolution. As in the macrocosm, Brahma manifests activity first, then the second or middle aspect, and finally the first or purposeful will makes itself seen, so with the microcosm. End of side 1, cassette number 17, A Treatise on Cosmic Fire, page 730. Continued on side 2. Side 2, cassette number 17, A Treatise on Cosmic Fire, continuing section 2, division D, Thought and Fire Elementals, on page 730. The Brahma aspect, that in which the not-self or material aspect is apparent and predominant. This covers the subhuman stages and the first three cycles of the personality life. A. First cycle, savage state. B. Second cycle, average man. C. Third cycle, intellectual, successful man. The Vishnu aspect, that in which the love-wisdom aspect gradually predominates and emerges through the medium of the Brahma aspect. It covers the final two stages of the human personality life and that period of egoic growth which embraces the final two initiations. A. First cycle, the path of probation. B. Second cycle, the path of initiation till the third initiation. C. Third cycle, that covering the fourth and fifth initiations. This is the temporary consummation, but just as in the animal kingdom, the human mind was latent and instinctive, and just as in the human kingdom, the Buddhic aspect is latent and instinctive, so during the final cycle of human endeavor, the Atma, or highest aspect of the monad, is also latent and instinctive. This must produce later stages of development.
There are no gaps in evolution and no periods wherein there is total absence of any one aspect. All are ever present, but they show forth in alternation. Page 731. Only when the fires of matter are blazing brightly and become radiatory does it become possible for the fire of mind to show forth, even though ever inherently present. Only when these two fires of matter and of mind have reached a stage of energetic heat and light can the electric fire of spirit show forth in its glory. Only again when these three are unitedly burning does the fire of matter die down for lack of that which it may consume. And only when that occurs is it possible for the fires of mind, on mental levels, to burn up that which it has hitherto animated. When this is accomplished, the fire of pure spirit, increased and intensified by the gaseous essence of the fire of matter, or fire by friction, and colored and rendered radiatory by the fire of mind, blazes forth in perfected glory, so that naught is seen save one vibrant flame. This idea can be extended away from man to a heavenly man, and again to the Logos in his cosmic relationship. Individualization marks one stage of the process in the intensification of fire by friction. It has relation to the achievement of Brahma, and marks a point in the energizing of substance. Certain forms are ready for self-consciousness. Two cosmic rays of differing polarities are mutually attracted. Initiation marks a stage in the intensification of solar fire. It has relation to the achievement of Vishnu and marks a point in the evolution of consciousness through self-consciousness to group consciousness or universal consciousness. Identification with the aggregate of all groups might be the term used to express the final stages of the evolutionary process. It marks a period towards the close of the Mahamanvantara when all groups begin consciously to work out the eternal will. It involves a type of realization, incredible to man now, but which is conceivable, though not yet practicable, to the Chohans of the hierarchy now on earth. Page 732. They work consciously carrying out the will of the planetary Logos in the planet. But even they are as yet far from appreciating fully the will and purpose of the Logos as he works through the system. Glimpses they may get, and an idea of the general plan, but the details are as yet unrecognizable. C. On Incarnation. A. Cosmic, Planetary, and Human. We leave now the consideration of self-consciousness as it is produced through the medium of the particular type of deva substance which the Agnishvatas provided for the body of the ego, and pass on to the study of incarnation, cosmic, planetary, and human. A hint as to the constitution of these solar Pitris and Manasa devas may come to the student who ponders upon the place of the egoic unit in the body of the planetary Logos, and in the particular center of which it forms a component part. These Manasa devas and Daihan Chohans, who produce self-consciousness in man, are indeed the energy and substance of the cosmic heavenly man. The word incarnation, in its root meaning, conveys the fundamental truth involved in the taking of a dense physical body, and should technically be applied only to that period of manifestation which concerns the three lower subplanes of the A. cosmic physical plane in relation to a solar Logos and to a planetary Logos, B. systemic physical plane in relation to man. This connotation has been preserved where the cosmic entities are concerned, but when man is under consideration, the term has been applied to the unification of the etheric double with the dense physical body, or to the appropriation by man of the vehicle composed of the substance of the lowest subplane of the cosmic physical plane in its lowest aspects. Page 733. This distinction has a certain significance and should be remembered. This appropriation is governed by the same laws which govern the appropriation by the Logos of his physical vehicle. In order to get an idea of what the procedure is, it might be of value if we consider the different kinds of pralaya and pondered upon those periods which ensue between incarnations. From the point of view of any unit involved, a pralaya is a period of quiescence, of cessation from a particular type of activity involving objectivity. Yet from the point of view of the great whole with which the unit may be involved, a pralaya may be considered merely as a transference of force from one direction into another. Though the unit may be temporarily devitalized as regards its form, yet the greater entity persists and is still active. Let us take up the matter first from the human standpoint and study pralaya as it affects the monad in incarnation. Footnote: there are fundamentally three kinds of pralaya. 1. Solar pralaya. This comes at the end of 100 years of Brahma. It marks reabsorption into unity. It marks end of manifestation of solar system. Concerns the solar logos. 2. Incidental pralaya. This succeeds the days of Brahma. It marks periods between manvantaras. Temporary form ceases, but duality remains. Concerns a planetary logos. 3. Individual pralaya, achieved by a man at the fifth initiation. Marks attainment of perfection. Concerns the monad. There is also the pralaya in connection with human evolution, which we call devachanik. It concerns the personality. Return to text. There are five types of pralaya with which we may legitimately concern ourselves. We should notice first the fact that this condition is primarily one that concerns the relationship between spirit and matter, in which a condition in substance is brought about through the action of the energizing factor, the spirit. It has, therefore, to do with the relation of the greater devas as they carry out their work of form building under the law of will of God to the lesser devas who represent living substance. Page 734. It will be apparent to the student that it concerns the relation of the Holy Spirit to the Mother in the production of the Son, and then the relation of the Son to the Mother. If the ideas formulated in this treatise have been carefully followed, it will be obvious that in studying the question of pralaya, we are studying the relation in time and space of the positive energy of the solar logos, the planetary logos, and of man to the substance through which alone manifestation is possible. Through this relation, existence on the objective planes can be brought about. B. The nature of pralaya. We can view pralaya as the work of abstraction and as the method which brings the form under the destroyer aspect of spirit, working ever under the law of attraction, of which the law of synthesis is but a branch. The basic law of the system is that which governs the relation of all atoms to the aggregate of atoms and of the self to the not-self. It is, from the occult standpoint, the most powerful force demonstration in the system, and should the law inconceivably cease to work, instantaneously the system and all forms therein, planetary, human, and other, would cease to be. By an act of will, the planetary schemes persist. By an act of will, the system is. By an act of the egoic will, man appears. When the will of the logos of the heavenly man and of the human divine ego is turned to other ends, the substance of their vehicles is affected and disintegration sets in. The five types of pralaya which concern the human unit are as follows. 1. The period of pralaya between two incarnations. This is of a triple nature and affects the substance of the three vehicles, physical, astral, and mental, reducing the form to its primitive substance and dissipating its atomic structure. The energy of the second aspect, that of the form builder, is withdrawn by the will of the ego, and the atoms composing the form become dissociated from each other and are resolved into the reservoir of essence to be recollected again when the hour strikes. This condition is brought about gradually by stages of which we are aware. The first stage is the withdrawal of the life force in the etheric vehicle from the threefold, dense, liquid, and gaseous, dense physical body, and the consequent falling into corruption and becoming scattered to the elements. Objective man fades out and is no more seen by the physical eye, though still in his etheric body. When etheric vision is developed, the thought of death will assume very different proportions. When a man can be seen functioning in his etheric physical body by the majority of the race, the dropping of the dense body will be considered just a release. The next stage is the withdrawal of the life force from the etheric body or coil and its devitalization. The etheric coil is but an extension of one aspect of the sutratma or thread, and this thread is spun by the ego from within the causal body, much as a spider spins a thread. It can be shortened or extended at will, and when the period of pralaya has been decided upon, this thread of light or of solar fire, note the word solar, is withdrawn and gathered back to the atomic subplane, where it will still vitalize the permanent atom and hold it connected within the causal body. The life impulses are then, as far as the physical plane is concerned, centralized within the atomic sphere. The third stage is the withdrawal of the life force from the astral form, so that it disintegrates in a similar manner, and the life is centralized within the astral permanent atom. It has gained an increase of vitality through physical plane existence and added color through astral experience. The final stage for the human atom is its withdrawal from the mental vehicle, page 736. The life forces after this fourfold abstraction are centralized entirely within the egoic sphere. Contact with the three lower planes is still inherently possible by means of the permanent atoms, the force centers of the three personality aspects. In each incarnation, the life forces have gained through the utilization of the vehicles, A, an increased activity which is stored in the physical permanent atom, B, an added coloring which is stored in the astral permanent atom, C, a developed quality of strength or purpose in action, which is stored in the mental unit. These are wrought into faculty in Devachan. Devachan is a state of consciousness reflecting in the life of the personality that higher state which we call nirvanic consciousness and which is brought about by egoic action. Footnote. Devachan. Who goes to Devachan? The personal ego, of course, but beatified, purified, holy. Every ego, the combination of the sixth and seventh principles, which, after the period of unconscious gestation, is reborn into the Devachan, is of necessity as innocent and pure as a newborn babe. The fact of his being reborn at all shows the preponderance of good over evil in his old personality. And while the karma of evil steps aside for the time being to follow him in his future earth reincarnation, he brings along with him but the karma of his good deeds, words and thoughts, into this Devachan. Bad is a relative term for us, as you were told more than once before, and the law of retribution is the only law that never errs. Hence all those who have not slipped down into the mire of unredeemable sin and bestiality go to the Devachan. They will have to pay for their sins, voluntary and involuntary, later on. Meanwhile, they are rewarded, receive the effects of the causes produced by them. Of course, it is a state, one, so to say, of intense selfishness, during which an ego reaps the reward of his unselfishness on earth. He is completely engrossed in the bliss of all his personal earthly affections, preferences, thoughts, and gathers in the fruit of his meritorious actions. No pain, no grief, nor even the shadow of a sorrow comes to darken the bright horizon of his unalloyed happiness, for it is a state of perpetual maya. Since the conscious perception of one's personality on earth is but an evanescent dream, that sense will be equally that of a dream in the Devachan, only a hundredfold intensified. Bardo is the period between death and rebirth, and may last from a few years to a kalpa. It is divided into three sub-periods. One, when the ego, delivered of its mortal coil, enters into Kama Loka, the abode of elementaries. Two, when it enters into gestation state. Three, when it is reborn in the Rupa Loka of Devachan. Sub-period one may last from a few minutes to a number of years, the phrase a few years becoming puzzling and utterly worthless without a more complete explanation. Sub-period two is very long, as you say, longer sometimes than you may even imagine, yet proportionate to the ego's spiritual stamina. Sub-period three lasts in proportion to the good karma, after which the monad is again reincarnated. Every effect must be proportionate to the cause, and as man's terms of incarnate existence bear but a small proportion to his periods of internatal existence in the Manvantaric cycle, so the good thoughts, words, and deeds of any one of these lives on a globe are causative of effects, the working out of which requires far more time than the evolution of the causes occupied. From Mahatma Letters to A.P. Sinnett, pages 100, 105, and 106. Devachan, a state intermediate between two earth lives into which the ego enters after its separation from its lower aspects or sheaths. Return to text, page 737. It is but a dim reflection in the separated units, and therefore tinged with selfishness and separative pleasure, of the group condition called nirvanic. In this high state of consciousness, each separate identity, though self-realizing, shares in the group realization, and therein lies bliss for the unit. Separation is no longer felt. Only unity and essential oneness is known. Therefore, as might be naturally deduced, there is no Devachan for the savage or little evolved man, as they merit it not, and have not the mentality to realize it. Hence, therefore, the rapidity of their incarnations and the brevity of the pralayic period. There is little in their case for the ego on its own plane to assimilate in the residue of incarnations, and hence the life principle withdraws rapidly from out of the mental form, with the resulting impulse of the ego to reincarnate almost immediately. When the life of the personality has been full and rich, yet has not reached the stage wherein the personal self can consciously cooperate with the ego, periods of personality nirvana are undergone, their length depending upon the interest of the life and the ability of the man to meditate upon experience. Later, when the ego dominates the personality life, the interest of the man is raised to higher levels, and the nirvana of the soul becomes his goal. Page 738. He has no interest in Devachan. Therefore, those upon the path, either the probationary path or the path of initiation, do not, as a rule, go to Devachan, but immediate incarnation becomes the rule in the turning of the wheel of life. This time it is brought about by the conscious cooperation of the personal self with the divine self or ego. 2. The period between egoic cycles. Herein is hid the mystery of the 777 incarnations and concerns the relation of the unit to his group on the egoic plane prior to the unfoldment of the fifth petal. It concerns man in the period between the savage stage and that of the disciple, when he is an average man but still in the two halls. The mystery of all root races lies here, and the egoic cycles coincide with the building of racial forms and civilizations. A man will reincarnate again and again in the various sub-races of a root race until a certain cycle has been covered. Then he may undergo a pralayic condition until in a later, and sometimes much later, root race, he will respond to its vibratory call, and the egoic impulse to incarnate will again be felt. In illustration of this, we should bear in mind that the more advanced humanity of today did not incarnate until the fourth root race. These cycles are one of the mysteries of initiation, though one of the earlier mysteries, and are revealed at the second initiation as they enable the initiate to comprehend his position, to to see somewhat the nature of the karmic impulse and to read his own record in the astral light. These might be considered the two lesser pralayic periods and concern primarily life in the three worlds. 3. Next comes the period wherein the man has attained freedom. A man has at this stage succeeded under law in abstracting himself, the freed soul, from out of the matter of the three worlds. He has used and worked with deva substance and has gained all the vibratory contact possible and has secured all the intended realizations and revelations. He can no longer be held imprisoned by the devas. He is free until, consciously and willingly, and in another round, he can return as a member of a hierarchy to continue his work of service for the little evolved humanity of that distant time. As this concerns the seven paths of opportunity for a master, we will not deal with it here. This is the great human pralaya. Footnote, the seven paths upon one of which all must pass. Path 1, the path of earth service. Path 2, the path of magnetic work. Path 3, the path of the planetary logoi. Path 4, the path to Sirius. Path 5, the ray path. Path 6, the path of the solar logos. Path 7, the path of absolute sonship. Return to text. Page 739. 4. Planetary pralaya. Man, after these cyclic happenings, is now a conscious part of his group and a vibrant point in a center in the body of a heavenly man, consciously alive and consciously aware of his place in the great whole. This involves a realization as to the center of which he is a point of energy, a knowledge of the type of force he is to transmit and to manipulate from cosmic levels, and a conscious relation with the six other centers in the planetary life with which he is associated. This period of conscious activity in the etheric substance of which the planetary body is formed persists according to the karma of the planetary lord, for the unit is now consciously associated with planetary karma and it is a participant in the working out of the will and purpose of the lord of his ray. On the higher planes of the system, this stage persists for the length of the life of a scheme, to which a period of pralaya succeeds that has its beginning towards the end of the seventh round in any scheme, or of the fifth if the law of persistence of a scheme is working out through cycles of five. I am here generalizing and speaking in broad terms. The karma of the units differ, and a man, according to the path he chooses after the fifth initiation, stays and works within his own scheme, but changes may occur through the following factors: A. Planetary karma. B. The will of the Lord of his ray. C. Orders emanating from the solar logos, which are conveyed to him after liberation via the planetary logos and through the medium of the Chohan of his ray. Page 740. He is then abstracted under a mysterious planetary law, which only works on cosmic etheric levels and is transferred to his destination. If we interpret all the above in terms of energy and of radioactivity and thus avoid the dangers of materialistic interpretation, the meaning will become clearer. 5. The Great Pralaya. This interval comes at the close of every 100 years of Brahma and sweeps into dissolution forms of every kind, subtle and dense, throughout the entire system. It is a period analogous to that dealt with when we considered the abstraction of man from his etheric vehicle and his ability then to function on the astral plane, dissociated from his dual physical form. Within the system, a process similar to that undergone when man withdraws the etheric body out of the dense physical vehicle will be seen towards the close of the Maha Manvantara. It will cover the period wherein the lesser four rays merge and blend, seeking duality and their polar opposites. Eventually, the four become two, the two become one, and all are then synthesized into the third major ray. The time is not yet, but lies countless eons ahead. It is the first appearance of the destroyer aspect in connection with the planetary schemes, and marks the beginning of the time when the heavens will melt with fervent heat and the sun becomes seven suns. Page 741. The microcosmic correspondence can be seen in the following process. The physical permanent atom absorbs the entire life force of the physical body, and its inherent heat and light is thereby increased, until at the fourth initiation, the seven spirillae are fully vitalized and vibrant. The internal heat of the atom plus the external heat of the egoic body, wherein it has its place, produces then that which destroys the permanent atom. Temporarily, and just prior to destruction, it becomes a tiny sevenfold sun, owing to the radiation and activity of the spirillae. So with the physical sun of the system, it will in a similar manner become seven suns when it has absorbed the life essence of the fully evolved planes and of the planetary schemes thereon. The ensuing conflagration is the final work of the destroyer aspect. It marks the moment of the highest development of Deva substance in the system, the consummation of the work of Agni and his fire angels, and the initiation of Brahma. Atomic substance will then individualize, which, as we know, is the goal for the atom, and after the great pralaya, the next solar system will start with the threefold spirit manifesting through substance, which is essentially distinguished by active intelligent love. This is necessarily incomprehensible to our fourth round minds. We have thus considered the various types of pralaya insofar as they affect the human unit. Each unit finds its ways eventually into one of the cosmic astral centers of the particular cosmic entity who is the lord of his ray, and therefore at the great pralaya those human units who have achieved and who have not passed to other distant cosmic centers will find their place there. Before we take up planetary and cosmic pralaya, we might here consider the relationship of the Agnishvatas, who caused the individualization of animal man on this planet, to other and previous cycles of evolution, and why we have only dealt with them from the point of view of a Mahamanvantara and of a Kalpa. Page 742. The reason we have not considered specifically the group of Agnishvatas, Kumaras, and Rudras connected with the Earth has been because we have handled the entire subject from the planetary standpoint and not from that of the human family. The student who seeks detailed information as to the Agnishvatas of the Earth chain has but to study the secret doctrine. We have attempted to carry the thought of the student beyond his own tiny sphere to the consideration of the work of the Manasa Devas in the solar system. In every scheme they have their place, but in some, as in the Jupiter scheme, they are just beginning their work, and in others, as in the Vulcan and Venus schemes, their work is nearly completed. Venus is in her last round and has nearly developed her fourth kingdom to perfection, or as much as it is possible in the system. In the Earth scheme, they are in full tide of work, and only in the next round will they demonstrate the height of their activity. They pass cyclically through the schemes and under law, the law of karma for the planetary logos, for they are essentially concerned with his life as it actuates his centers. They come into a scheme on a wave of manasic energy from the head center of the logos, and in the process of passing through his heart center, three things occur. One, they become differentiated into seven groups. Two, they direct themselves as streams of energy to some particular scheme. Three, their contact with the scheme is that which produces the manifestation of the fourth creative hierarchy and leads to the monads taking form in the three worlds. Page 743. These entities who sacrifice themselves for the human hierarchy, and we must note here the accuracy of the fact that they emanate from the logoic head center or from the will aspect, are the true saviors who give their lives for the good of the race. They stand in relation to the totality of the schemes as the occult hierarchy of any particular planet stands to men upon that planet. During pralaya, they are withdrawn, as all else, from manifestation and return to a cosmic center of which the logoic head center is but a dim reflection, they return the richer for experience. The old commentary says, quote, "The Deva shineth with added light when the virtue of the will hath entered. He garnereth color as the reaper garners wheat, and storeth up for the feeding of the multitude. Over all this Deva host, the mystic goat presideth. Makara is, and is not, yet the link persisteth." Close quote. Rounds come and go, but except from the standpoint of a particular planet, the Manasa Devas are forever present, but their influence is not forever felt. In considering the planetary pralaya, we might briefly enumerate the following periods of quiescence. Between two globes in a chain. This covers the period of abstraction of the seeds of all life and its transference from one sphere to another. The seed Manu of a globe gathers all the life forces into himself, as does the Logos at the close of a system, and as also transpires at the close of a chain, and holds them quiescent in his aura. This covers a period of a manvantara, or of one day of Brahma. Between two chains. This covers the period of a mahamanvantara, or of one year of Brahma. There are many ways of arriving at the greater cycles, but there is no need to confuse with the intricacies of figures. The 10 prajapatis, or rishis, or the 10 planetary logoi, manifest through their 10 schemes in time and space, the hour of their appearing differing. Page 744. Each likewise manifests, as does the Logos, through a septenate and a triad, making again a 10 of perfection. Between two solar systems. This covers the period of 100 years of Brahma, and through the study of the planetary cycles, comprehension of these greater cycles may come. Complication comes to the student nevertheless in the fact that two of the schemes cover their cyclic periods in 5 rounds, while others have 7. One scheme has but 3 rounds, but a mystery is hidden here. On the inner round, one planet has 9 cycles to run before the purpose of its Lord is completed. Certain lesser periods of pralaya do not concern man at all, but concern the atom of matter as it is released from form of any kind in the subhuman kingdoms. Pralaya is the result of radioactivity carried to a conclusion. C. Types of human rebirth. In our study of the building of thought forms and the agencies for their construction, we have considered 1. The Deva substance out of which they are constructed, 2. The energy which animates them and its source, 3. Their appearance in time and space, or their incarnation, 4. Their disappearance, or pralaya, 5. The constructing entities who, in a threefold manner, produce these forms, utilizing the process of A. Meditation, which is ever the preliminary to construction, B. Dynamic force, or the positive energy which seizes upon its polar opposite, negative substance, and utilizes it, C. The impartation of color or quality which molds that which has been prepared, D. A secondary vitalization which sets in separate motion the thought form thus created. Page 745. We will now consider the mystery of rebirth, or the incarnation of those lives which exist in subtler matter, and yet which seek form according to law and touch upon their specific intent on dense physical levels. We can consider this in connection with the cosmic entities who seek existence on the physical plane of the cosmos, our solar systemic planes, or the reincarnating jivas who are driven by the law towards earthly manifestation in order to become fully conscious and acquire by means of sentient existence added faculty and power. H.P.B. has said that rebirths may be divided into 3 classes. A. Those of avatars, B. Those of adepts, C. Those of jivas seeking development. To those who are endeavoring to grasp somewhat the mystery of rebirth and its laws and purpose, and who are confused when considering the mystery of the Buddha and the secret purpose of that mysterious entity, the Silent Watcher, To those who find the problem of understanding the position of the Kumaras and their relation to the planetary logos almost an insuperable one, it might be wise to say, study and meditate upon the difference existing between the lower principles and the higher three. Study and meditate upon the place and position of these lower principles in the body of the planetary logos, and ponder upon the correspondence between A, the Devachan of the reincarnating Jiva, B, the Nirvana of the adept, C, the Pralaya of a cosmic entity, such as the Lord of a chain, the Lord of a scheme, and the Lord of a ray. Page 746. I say correspondence in its esoteric significance, and do not seek to infer analogy in detail, but only in purpose and in experience. It may be said of all three states that they are periods of development, long cycles of meditation, and interludes between stages of activity. Hence the emphasis laid in the East and in all occult schools of development upon meditation, for it is the means of bringing to the unit under development the capacity which will produce A, abstraction or liberation from form, B, creative power, C, direction of energy through an act of the will, D, future constructive activity. By means of meditation, a man finds freedom from the delusion of the senses and their vibratory lure. He finds his own positive center of energy and becomes consciously able to use it. He becomes, therefore, aware of his real self, functioning freely and consciously beyond the planes of sense. He enters into the plans of the greater entity within whose radiatory capacity he has a place. He can then consciously proceed to carry out those plans as he can grasp them at varying stages of realization, and he becomes aware of essential unity. But when a man has thus freed himself from the objects of sense in the three worlds, he again becomes aware of the need of further meditation, and it is this, to man in the three worlds, inconceivable form of meditation that engrosses the attention of the adept, and which is undertaken by him in two great stages, each preceding the two final initiations, the sixth and the seventh. I refer not here only to adepts who make the sacrifice and choose rebirth for service on the planet, but to all adepts. Freedom to work on any path must be gained by occult meditation. Freedom to escape beyond the ring pass knot is also thus attained. And likewise the curious state of quiescence which is achieved by those who have offered for service as the occult hierarchy in the next round. Page 747. In them have to be stored the psychic seeds of knowledge which will be available in the fifth round. This necessitates for them an attitude of receptivity to occurrences at the close of each root race, when there is, on subtler levels, a gathering in of psychic force and its storing with those prepared for its reception. Their work is analogous to that of the seed Manu, who himself works through a septenate, as do these storers of the psychic life forces. Again, for such cosmic entities as the planetary Logoi, periods of meditation transpire, but these concern them on the cosmic planes, and only the effects are felt on this. They meditate in their physical brains, and therefore in substance, as does man, but the process is carried on in the etheric brain. This should be pondered on, for it holds the mystery hid. Also, the fact that some of these lords of the rays are more proficient in meditation than others, and thus achieve differing results, which work out in their schemes, should be carefully borne in mind. D. The future coming of the Avatar. The coming Avatar, quote, from the zenith to the nadir, from dawn to fall of night, from the emergence into being of all that is or may be, to the passing into peace of all that hath achieved, gleameth the orb of blue and the inner radiant fire. From the gates of gold down to the pit of earth, out from the flaming fire, down to the circle of gloom, rideth the secret Avatar, bearing the sword that pierceth. Naught can arrest his approach, and none may say him nay. To the darkness of our sphere he rideth alone, and on his approach is seen the uttermost disaster and the chaos of that which seeketh to withstand. Page 748. The Asuras veil their faces, and the pit of Maya reeleth to the foundation. The stars of the eternal Laz vibrate to that sound, the word uttered with sevenfold intensity. Greater the chaos becometh, the major center with all the seven circulating spheres rock with the echoes of disintegration. The fumes of utter blackness mount upwards in dissipation. The noise discordant of the warring elements greets the oncoming one and deters him not. The strife and cries of the fourth great hierarchy, blending with the softer note of the builders of the fifth and sixth, meet his approach. Yet he passeth on his way, sweeping the circle of the spheres and sounding forth the word. From the nadir to the zenith, from eve unto the day be with us. From the circle of manifestation to the center of pralaic peace is seen the enveloping blue, lost in the flame of achievement. Up from the pit of Maya, back to the portals of gold, forth from the gloom and darkness, back to the splendor of day, rideth the manifested one, the Avatar, bearing the shattered cross. Naught can arrest his return, none can impede his path, for he passeth along the upper way, bearing his people with him. Cometh the dissolution of pain, cometh the end of strife, cometh the merging of the spheres and the blending of the hierarchies. All then is reabsorbed within the orb, the circle of manifestation. The forms that exist in Maya and the flame that devoureth all are garnered by the one who rideth the heavens and entereth into the timeless aeon. Close quote from the Archives of the Lodge. We have touched upon the subject of avatars and the various classes into which they might be divided. We might now enlarge somewhat more upon the methods. The methods whereby certain cosmic existences and certain highly evolved entities appear among men to do a specific work might be very inadequately and cursorily summarized as follows. The method of overshadowing, the method of embodying some principle, the method seen in the mystery of the Bodhisattva or the Christ, the method of direct incarnation. Page 749. The handicap of words is great, and the above phrases but convey a hint as to the true meaning. Therein lies safety for the student, for the real significance would be incomprehensible to him and would but mislead him and guide him along the path of misunderstanding. Until a man is a pledged initiate, he cannot comprehend the matter. Of these, the most ordinary method is the first. All these methods of manifestation will perhaps be better understood by the student if he interprets them always in terms of force and energy, and if he notes that dim reflections of the same processes and faint analogies can be traced among the reincarnating jivas. When a man has reached a certain development and can be of service to the world, cases occur when he is overshadowed by a great adept, or, as in the case of HPB, by one greater than an adept. A chela can be a center through which his master can pour his energy and force for the helping of the world, and in certain important crises, men have been overshadowed by more than one of the great ones. End of side 2, cassette number 17, A Treatise on Cosmic Fire, page 749. Continued on cassette number 18.